Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Very excited because Star Wars The Force Awakens comes out on DVD in a few hours in this country.
Ooh, excited? Excited much?
Certainly am.
All right, let's go. What's that?
That's for the rest of my week planned.
I'm sure there's going to be tons of, special features, and I'm sure you're going to listen to audio commentary. Are you that kind of person, or are you just going to continually watch the movie over and over and over again?
I listen to audio commentaries. I'm not really big on the sort of on the other features and stuff like that, but the audio commentaries I'm really keen on. The thing I'm really looking forward to is actually going through the scenes of that flashback, sort of like looking through that and looking for clues there.
Oh, nice. Well, that's something to look forward to. Good luck with that. I don't know when and where I'll get around to buying that, but I'm sure eventually someone will probably buy that for me. So that's the kind of film I'm like, I'm a big Star Wars buff, but still at the same time, it's like, well, is there any rush to own this on Blu-ray for me? And it's like, I can wait. Hmm. Okay. Since we're talking Disney properties, let's talk, the first thing right off the press, let's talk Civil War press reactions. Cause I think this week they've had a screening of the new, Marvel property film, Civil War, Captain America, and the reviews are out, and there's press reactions, and they all tend to be more or less good, right?
Yeah, they're really positive across the board. I mean, the fact that they've actually, because we're quite a long way off from the film actually being shown. It's a couple of weeks for the UK, and I know it's a week later in America, but the to do them this early is really really. So I'm totally distracted here because we're showing a clip I've never seen before from the X-Men Apocalypse movie.
Ooh,
so
nice.
I'm just trying to pull that out of my head.
Anything in particular worth noting?
Yeah, it's actually it looks more like an ad. It's basically Quicksilver running around and basically all the other X-Men sort of all like frozen him, sort of changing things around. It's actually an ad.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I should keep the TV clicked off in future. But anyway, going back to the Civil War, like I was talking about. To do it so far in advance really to me shows a lot of confidence. And everybody has for sort of like their particular reviews or sort of journalists or this kind of trust. And the guys who I tend to trust, every film that they like, I like, or they dislike, I dislike, is the Collider team. Because they're kind of on my wavelength with the sort of films that they watch and sort of get excited about and that sort of thing. And they have a similar sort of attitude to movies that I do. And they have basically come out and they, without actually giving, they've not actually given spoilers or anything, but they are absolutely raving about this film. They say it's like, it's, one of the best Marvel movies that they've done. They're really raving about it. So there's so much good stuff in there. And the one scene that everyone is talking about is the big battle scene at the airport that you've seen clips of. And they say that although you've seen quite a few little shots from that, you've just no idea how good that whole scene is. They say, some of it, John Campia said that he reckons that is one of the best action films in a film ever, let alone in superhero film, just ever. So it's got some really, really positive vibes about this. And I've already got my ticket for it. I'll be seeing it on Friday the 29th. So the show after that, I'll be able to give my own non-spoiler reports. But from all indications, this one looks like it could be one we're going to be talking about for a long time.
Yes. To give you some kind of indicator of how well the film's being received, the aggregate Rotten Tomatoes site has it at a 94%. Now compare that to Batman vs. Superman: Dawn of Justice, which is at a 28%. So, I'm very looking forward to this film. A question I asked, and you brought it up very briefly, sort of just now, is you bought your tickets in advance. I never understood that. It's like, how do you know what your plans are going to be? I mean, are you going to go with someone? Or are you going to watch it by yourself? Or how do you know, like, in advance, that's when I want to go, that's when I want to see the film? I mean, Are you watching this as soon as they show it, or is this something where as soon as you can get around to it and you know the way you're going to be, when the film comes out and you're going to want to say, hey, I want to watch it this time, or the movie theater's so accommodating, they'll be like, well, you bought tickets for this showing, but you called us in advance, let us know you're going to cancel, and the tickets are still good, you still paid the money, so you can just move it around. How does that work?
Well, I mean, basically, whenever there's a film, whether it be a Star Wars or a Marvel movie or you know, something like that, I always go on the day that it's released. Mm-hmm. So I always basically make plans. I know my work rota this far in advance, so I know what time I'll finish work and to be over there. And at the end of the day, I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't have responsibilities keeping me away from that. So basically, I just book my ticket, book my seat for the showing that I know that I'm going to be there for, and I just plan it that way.
Well, I'm just asking because I know the majority of people I hear talking about films like this and Star Wars, they always buy the tickets in advance. And I always thought that's odd because it's like, I know me and my friends, I know the way we will do things in advance. We don't exactly, nothing's set in stone. Maybe we want to get dinner before. We might want to get dinner after. Maybe someone's, you know, having car problems, whatever. We just decide to buy the tickets more or less, you know, maybe 30 minutes before the film. But like I said, I recognize I'm in the minority, and most people do, especially big films like this. They'll buy their tickets way in advance. So that's something to look forward to. I'm really hyped for this film. I was, you know, I'm sort of the guy that's just, you know, and if you ever heard Comic Conversations, we're always kind of dismissive, or we're not dismissive, but we don't never mention any really real comic book movie news or comic book TV show news. And so I'm just like, well, I'm a comic book person and I watch these movies, but I'm not too invested in this. This is the first time in a long time that I've actually been super excited for a film.
Yeah, and it's not surprising because it's just sort of, it just looks like a, you know, something that we've not really seen from a, you know, from another superhero film like this, because it is basically, it's not a film where you've got like a easily defined villain that is going to be like, you know, the bad guy, you know, which is, just looks like, you know, really, really interesting. The fact that we've seen these characters through so many films, we've seen, you know, Cap through his own films, through Avengers, we've seen Iron Man through all this. And it just looks, you know, the idea that they're going to go to war. And if you look at the actual, you know, the teams that they've got with them, you know, we know all these people. We've seen them in other movies before. We're all brought together. And I think this one's really caught people's imagination. And I've got, oh, another thing as well, I should have said, which is a fairly key point of the whole film, is the fact that they say that the Spider-Man stuff, you know, is, you know, they say they've absolutely nailed it. They say that, you know, this is sort of, he's not in it massively, but they say that when he is in there, you know, he really, you know, his role in the film is, you know, is important. And that it's actually surprising the amount of people who I know who don't know he's in it. Cause I've been showing people the trailers at work with Spider-Man in it, and when I was at the cinema, they show the trailer, and I just sort of took a look around when Spider-Man came on, and the amount of people who went, "Oh my God, Spider-Man's in!" Sort of thing, you know? So I think as fans, as sort of, you know, like us and that, we just sort of take it for granted that everyone sort of, like, you know, knows what's going on with movies, like, you know, in the same way we do, you know. So I won't be surprised if some people actually are sitting in the cinema and actually, you know, don't even know he's going to be in there.
Yeah, I think I saw Batman vs. Superman with my father, and obviously he's not hip to all this stuff, but if there's a superhero movie, he'll want to watch it with me. And then when they showed him on Spider-Man, he was like, oh, okay. He was sort of cynical because everybody in the theater was freaking out about it. He's like, okay, whatever. But it's like, you know, he's sort of excited too. So it was kind of a cool reaction from him as well. Someone who doesn't follow the internet as closely, isn't as invested in all these comic book movies. So that's cool. All right, since you brought it up, so let's move on to our next topic. The Spider-Man title that just came out recently, where it's been announced as Homecoming. Now, I don't know if that's sort of a wink and a nod to Marvel getting, to a degree, Spider-Man back in their films, but also it could be because the way they're choosing to have the Spider-Man. He's going to be a high schooler, so is this maybe going to be a story featured around a Homecoming dance, maybe? That's what I'm thinking, but I also think it's a wink and a nod to Marvel obviously getting the rights to a degree back to Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's how I took it. I mean, it could, to be honest, I'd not really thought of the, me being British and, you know, not into the whole sort of homecoming queen thing like you have in America, that whole sort of, you know, that sort of scenario. Mm-hmm. I'd not actually consider that. So it could be built around that. But yeah, I definitely think it's sort of them sort of like say, you know, we've got Spider-Man back in a way into the Marvel universe, and this is sort of not only that, but like a back to basics sort of, you know, because this one, it sounds like it's going to be sort of, you know, Peter Parker in high school, you know, back like a bit like when we redid Spider-Man in the Ultimate Universe, that sort of thing. So I definitely think that, you know, there is a little bit of a, this is a fresh start, this is a, you know, a fresh Spider-Man, and this is going to be Spider-Man how we think he should be done. So I think there's definitely an element in that as well.
Yes, and another news story we have concerning this film, there's rumors, nothing set in stone so far. In fact, if anything, we've seen this before in the past where so-and-so's in talks, and it goes public, and then when they finally make the final decision on who they're going to cast, they wind up going a different direction. Now, the one that seems to be attached right now is Michael Keaton. But this, like I said, I've seen this happen many times before where they're talking about any kind of, you know, comic book property, film, or television. They're looking to talk to somebody. They're looking to court someone. And I think what happens is the pressure is so great because there's obviously, more often than not, people are, you know, they like the idea. So then I have to imagine the actor has a lot more leverage and the studio is like, well, we don't want to spend more money, so we're going to go in a different direction. So, but yeah, the word is of right now that Michael Keaton's being rumored to be attached to this film.
Yeah, I mean, the story that that people seem to be going with is that he's going to be the Vulture, which to me, I'm not saying it is not going to happen, but when I first heard that, it was kind of, the idea of Michael Keaton being in the film, I'm sort of, you know, totally on board with, because I think he's a great actor and I think he'd make a great villain, you know, whatever. Let's face it, he's awesome as an actor. But when we said the Vulture, my first thought was, are people pinning that on there because of me being in Birdman?
I think it's that, and then he's a balding guy, he's a little bit older, and that seems like a role that would just be perfect for him.
Yeah. But. I have to say, Vulture was always one of the, I think, probably one of the lesser villains in, but to me, it was always, you know, something that I really, really liked, because I always thought there was something like really, really creepy about him. I don't know if it's just like, you know, because he's really old and frail and everything, but I personally, you know, really liked him, and I think he would be perfect in that role. I also could see him as possibly like, you know, a Norman Osborn, you know, figure in there, but they've already done two Norman Osborn, so maybe they'll think about going in a different direction. But I think it'd be, you know, a really good Vulture, and the Vulture, you know, that would be one, it's not been done before at all, so I think this would be like a really good move. But, you know, we'll see where this goes. But I would love to see Michael Keaton in there in some role, you know, maybe even there's like, you know, J. Jonah Jameson or something like that.
There you go. That's a role that'd be perfect for the, well, I would say perfect, but that wouldn't be the world's worst pick.
No, it'd be a good one.
And so I've sort of been having fun with it. I'm like, oh, it's Michael Keaton. Obviously, they're going to make him Nighthawk. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that character, Daz, or maybe our listeners are not familiar with it. Okay, so there's a group in the Marvel comic book universe called the Squadron Supreme who are an unabashed ripoff of the Justice League. Now, they have a member in their squad, and I've seen a lot of people figuring it out. They have a Batman. The Batman's called Nighthawk, so I'm saying, wouldn't it be funny if they bring in Michael Keaton into the Marvel film franchise and they cast him as their equivalency of Batman?
That would be good. Funnily enough, and in fact, we might as well talk about this now because we're going to talk about it at some point. I've just posted an article which should be up in a couple of days, which is I did an article a few weeks back about my favorite superhero fights. Mm-hmm. I've also done one now about my favorite super team fights, and one of the ones I had in there is a Squadron Supreme fight.
Ooh.
And in there I basically mentioned, like, you know, Hyperion and Nighthawk, and you're absolutely right, it is basically, if you watch that, it is a Justice League ripoff massively. I mean, they've even got like a Wonder Woman character, you know, a Green Arrow character and stuff like that. So yeah, but what you've said, it is pretty much, you know, bang on the money. I remember reading that because I got the 12 issue series in a graphic novel years mm-hmm. and years ago. It was the first time I read it, and I was reading, I was thinking, how did they not get sued by this? Because it's such a,
well, here's the thing, no one's mistaking the Squadron Supreme for the Justice League. There is parody laws, and you know what, at the end of the day, you can look at this group and your first thought isn't, well, they're obviously the Justice League. It's they're different enough, and there's parody laws that protect this kind of thing where no one's mistakenly picking up a Squadron Supreme book thinking it's a Justice League book. And the characters are different enough. You don't have Hyperion, you know. his costume is very different than Superman's. It's not a red and blue kind of motif. It's really his color scheme is completely different. Even Nighthawk, I mean, they've gone since then, they've had a new Nighthawk, and his costume is more similar to Batman's, but still at the end of the day, it's different enough to where no one's confusing the two for the other. So I think that's the way they get around it. I think a buddy of mine that is going to be on the podcast later on, it's Mike Rowe. In fact, he was telling me that in the Superman and Batman series, I think in the early 2000s, they had a storyline where they met up with, obviously, sort of akin to that, a ripoff of the Avengers. And, you know, obviously they had like a Captain America stand-in and a Hulk stand-in and Iron Man stand-in. So it's kind of cute that you kind of see it both ways. But DC, for the most part, really doesn't mess with that kind of stuff. Like, they've done it here and there. But for the most part, they're not as they're not like Marvel, where the Squadron Supreme is an established group and they've been around for decades. But that's just interesting to think of. And as far as the Vulture, if it was any other studio doing Vulture with Michael Keaton, I'd be kind of hesitant. But because Marvel has so much goodwill, and this is the new Spider-Man, and you know, I have to imagine this film's going to be good. And even though Vulture isn't my first pick or my second pick or even my 10th pick for a supervillain in a new Spider-Man film, I have faith, and they have so much goodwill that I'm willing to give this a shot.
I think it could open up some like really good special effects as well, you know. But, you know, because you'd be able to have him sort of like, you know, flying through the city cape, and obviously Spider-Man sort of, you know, flying around in his webs and everything. So you could have some good aerial battles. So I think that it opens up a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. Okay. Since we're talking,
speaking of just we talk about sort of lawsuits and that sort of thing. Just reminding me that the reason why Shazam, or Captain Marvel, whatever you want to call him, is actually DC, is that in the, I don't know if it was the 30s or 40s, when he first came along, DC actually sued.
Yes.
About the creation for that. Because he looked too much like Superman. Mm-hmm. And they managed to win that, I think, and they actually got, you know, control of Shazam.
Is that how that worked out? I thought they just changed the name, and I thought a couple of years later they eventually got the rights to the Captain Marvel character.
Not so much the name, but the character itself. Because originally it was a different company.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
It was a different company that started doing, and they did Shazam. And then DC sued because they said it was too much like Superman.
There you go. Okay,
even though the costume's nothing like him, apart from the cape and everything, you know, but because of that similarity, they were able to sue, and I think eventually, you know, got custody of the character, you know, through that.
Yeah, you're right. What threw me off is because I know they did the storyline in the 1980s about Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that was their way of bringing Shazam / Captain Marvel into their normal continuity. So I just assumed that I'd heard of that lawsuit. Like, what was it, back in the 40s? I assume.
It was way back a long time ago.
So, you know, I obviously heard of that lawsuit, but I just thought whatever, they rewarded them damages, they changed the name, or they made it good. But now that I think about it, I think you are right. They just forked over the character. But what threw me off is just they took so long to finally bring Captain Marvel in the fold in their normal DC continuity. I think that's what threw me off. Okay, since we're talking Marvel, let's talk our last Marvel topic, at least for the time being. The Doctor Strange trailer made its way to the internet this week, and I don't know. I'm sure Dazza, I'm sure you're thrilled about it, but to me, I'm like, this might be one of the underperforming ones. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be a bomb, but I'm thinking maybe along the lines of maybe a Thor. This is not going to, you know, do as hot, but you know, they're on a hot streak also. So you never know. This could just still be wind up being another success story for the Marvel Studios franchise.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this film. I think acting wise, this has got one of the strongest casts in any of the Marvel movies. You know, I think if you look at all the, you know, the people involved with it, I think that is a real good cast. I have to say, this trailer it was a bad trailer, and it didn't make me any less excited for the film, but I wasn't wowed by it either.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's because I'm expecting like some like, you know, really fancy psychedelic special effects or whatever. When I saw this, most of the special effects, I was just thinking, that looks a lot like Inception.
I think that's done on purpose. People want you to, you know, correlate between the two, and more people than not have a good have a better feeling from Inception. They have good memories from that film. And if they could do some stuff that's kind of an homage to it, I'm sure people will be on board with.
Yeah. I just wasn't that. After I watched it, I was like, that was okay. But the only bit that I really thought to me looked spectacular was the bit where he takes the punch and he sort of does the outer body experience bit. That little scene there looked like, quite, sort of, a bit wacky to me, but, that looked good to me. Generally speaking, the trailer as a whole, I don't know if I've just been spoiled lately by the amount of, like, really, really good trailers that have sort of been coming out, but this one, it's not that it sort of took me out of it, but I was, not going to like the film now, but it just, as a trailer, it just didn't hit me like a lot of trailers do recently. I actually think Doctor Strange is quite, I think this is one of the trickier ones that they've taken on as a, as a movie. I think it's just one of these that it's a character, the whole sort of, magic in movies sort of thing, and with Doctor Strange, because it is quite a convoluted sort of magic and sort of like other dimensions and that sort of thing. I think this might be a sort of a bit of a tricky one to pull off, but I'm sure they'll do a good job. But like I say, it's got a hell of a cast, so yeah. But this trailer, I was kind of nonplussed about it.
Yeah, this is the first time I saw a Marvel movie trailer, and I felt like, at this point, this is just an assembly line. So, it was literally what I expected going forward. It's like, whatever I thought this Doctor Strange trailer was going to be, it delivered that. Didn't give me that much more. It kind of feels like I just said, it feels like an assembly line at this point. It's like, okay, here's the Doctor Strange story. We're going to hit XYZ points, and this is what the film's going to be. And eventually, we're going to bring him in the fold. And that's going to be another superhero that we're going to have in our back catalog. And it's like, that's cool. No, I'm glad that they're reaching out and trying something new. But at the same time, it's like, I sort of seen this before, and I know from doing a little bit of research that this film's going to be a little bit different. It's not going to be like most of the films where this, a good chunk of the movie is going to be devoted for the origin story. I already know right off the bat he's going to start off as Doctor Strange, and I'm sure from the trailer we've seen there's some stuff that they're going to do about his origin. But I know at the end of the day this isn't an origin film, so I'm kind of glad we're at least getting that bit of a shakeup as far as this film's concerned. But I thought, I have two thoughts. One, which being Doctor Strange, I thought this would have been the opportunity for them maybe to think outside the box, to do maybe artsy kind of trippy stuff. And this sort of comes up as just, like I said earlier, it's just sort of manufactured. It's like, well, this is the story we're going to do. This is the character and his powers. And in that way, he's different. But for the most part, we're not going to deviate from the formula of what we've been successful with. But at this point, it's like, I kind of wished maybe they'd change it up a little bit, maybe been a little more risky. Maybe do a film that most people are kind of hesitant on, like maybe kind of make it like a trippy film. But I guess that they know what they're doing, and if it winds up not delivering, that's fine. They have enough films in the back catalog. And Doctor Strange is a character that, even if the film doesn't do all too well, it's going to be a nice character that they have to play with down the road with all the Avengers films. But my only concern is they've already established in the Thor franchise, in the last Thor movie, that there's no, like, they're quick to kind of dismiss magic. So it's hard how you can come back now and say, well, there's this guy and he has legitimate magic. We know we said in the last Thor movie that there's not really magic. It's just technology that maybe humans don't necessarily understand. But it's kind of weird that they're trying to come back now. It's kind of cattywampus. And they're like, well, here's this character who actually does have magic. And it's like, oh, okay, you just told us that there's no such thing as magic. But okay, we'll take your word for it.
I guess I can get around it by just saying that the Asgardians don't know everything, that there's stuff that is beyond, what is known by even sort of, people like Asgard and stuff like that. So, they can always say that, that there's always other dimensions where sort of, where you will draw and where magic does actually exist.
Okay. Cool enough. All right. Let's talk. Let's go from, I think we're going to wrap up our Marvel discussion from here. Let's move on to DC. We saw a new Suicide Squad trailer. Cause how many trailers is this now, Dazza? This is what, the third, fourth Dazza trailer?
This is the third one, I believe. Cause there was the one at Comic-Con that got leaked. And then there was the one with the Queen music. Mm-hmm. And then we've got this one.
what's the song trailer featured on this one now? I forgot. I'm sure.
Well, there was two. There was the main bit was the Ballroom Blitz
there
by the Sweet, mm-hmm. And then there was another one. It's, I don't know the lady who sings it, but it's the one that but song that goes like "You Don't Own Me."
That, okay, but the ballroom blitz is the one that was heavily featured that, as far as
that was the one with all the action. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So another great trailer, but you know, you hear all this stuff about they went back and did some reshoots to make the film more funny, and that's what we had in this trailer. We had a lot more instances where they showed, you know, the lighter side of the film, a couple of comedy bits they're going to maybe do, but I sure hope this film delivers, because so far the last two trailers have been amazing, and I hope when the film comes out and we're talking about it, we're like, yeah, they saved all the best parts for the trailer, and then when we got around to watching the film, it's like, it wasn't much of a film.
Yeah, I think this trailer was just like the last one, absolutely awesome, you know. And if the film is like this, you know, as the same tone of this trailer and everything like that, I think this could be a great one. It's one of these films that I don't think it's going to be that hard to actually get wrong, because what all you have to do is basically, you know, you take all these different characters, you have a lot of cool, really cool, acrobatic action sequences, you know, give them some funny lines to do, have a good story, you got the Joker in there and everything as the villain. I don't see how you can sort of get it, you know, that wrong. And the thing is as well, if you think about it, this is a film, it's not quite a standalone because it's still in the DC universe, but apart from sort of having Batman in it as a cameo, it's not as if they're having to like tie this in with Justice League or use this to build on a bigger franchise. You know, but it's almost like the freedom they had with Guardians of the Galaxy with Marvel, in that they can sort of, you know, take this in a different direction, do what they want. And but there's been a lot of talk about all this with the reshoots and everything. Like that. I mean, DC, the creator said this week that, you know, it wasn't to make anything, you know, funny or anything like that, if you were just doing like regular reshoots. And the thing is, all films pretty much do reshoots, you know, particularly sort of like, you know, like big budgets ones, and you know, but they always have the actors on a retainer, you know, to go in there and just like, you know, when we come to the editing room, just fix little scenes here and there and add stuff that was, you know, sort of. So that to me, you know, isn't something I'm sort of, you know, that worried about, you know. And it looks like DC have sort of, From what I gather, they're starting to do the media campaign, and they're doing some imaginative stuff, a bit like sort of when we had the Deadpool stuff, because they're having sort of like parties where they're having people going, you know, going around places dressed as Harley Quinn and everything, and sort of like, you know, handing out flyers of that sort of thing, getting publicity that way, you know. So I personally have a lot of big hopes for this one, you know, I'm really excited. I don't think it's a funny. I mean, let's face it, we've seen films before which seemed really, really easy and they've got wrong. So hopefully this one, you know, they'll get right. And I'm watching it, I'm sure there's a lot of good stuff. The one thing I really hope is that with all the soundtrack music they've been, you know, doing such a good job of having in, I hope this one has a really, you know, killer soundtrack. You know, like Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, did. You know, that would be awesome if they could do that. But I'm really excited, and I've got, like, you know, lots of positive thoughts for this one.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, what you were just mentioning. I hope they incorporate that in the final film. Now, they've had that music for the trailers, but I hope they find some way to incorporate it into the film, and then maybe pull a Guardians of the Galaxy and eventually just turn out an original, you know, soundtrack with all the songs that they picked, and have that, you know, maybe sell as a record or as a CD, and you can kind of, you know, promote that as well as part of the film. My only concern for this film is, and I think Alex has told me from my show Comic Conversations, that part of the problem with this film seems to be they have so many characters that people don't know about, and the only one that people are really excited about is Harley Quinn. So my question becomes, why didn't you just do a Harley Quinn movie? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, to be honest with you, the whole having too many characters, you know, I'm not that worried about that either, because I've seen lots of films in the past, like the, you know, the Guys on the Mission movies, you know, stuff like, you know, The Magnificent Seven. I mean, that was a film that was like loaded, you know, with you know, different actors and everything, like, you know, with their own sort of like, you know, little personalities and stuff. You know, films like Guns in Avarone and stuff like that, all these sort of, like, you know, and those films were fine. You know, having like lots and lots of characters in there, you know, if anything, that should make things sort of easy, because you're not having to sort of, you know, build up and build up, you know, one particular character. You can, you know, yeah. I'm I'm totally fine with them having, you know, lots of characters.
You're right. There's films like Ocean's 11, which, you know,
yeah,
already,
exactly,
we're
yeah,
not, we're not dealing with 11 characters. So, and that film was a success. So to say that this won't be a success because there's too many characters, maybe I was wrong in that.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that they're sort of like, you know, they're bringing all these characters together. And then if any of them, like, you know, really, really take off, then we'll get, like, you know, a solo movie, you know, down the line and everything. But to be honest, when they were sort of, when they actually sort of greenlit, it's not as if Harley Quinn is a character that they probably felt they could do an entire movie around. So, you know, this is sort of probably like an easier movie by having lots and lots of characters in there, and then they can sort of pick and choose, you know, who they basically sort of focus on in the future, either to do solo movies or stick them in some of, you know, the bigger movies, that sort of thing. I would expect if this, you know, this one goes really well, that the, you know, the Batman solo movie, which, you know, has been announced this week, as we've got a lot of news this week. The Batman, so, you know, that is going ahead. You know, that is going ahead, and it's expected that, you know, Ben Affleck will be named as sort of, you know, director at some point in the future as well. I won't be surprised if the, I would be really surprised if the Joker isn't in it, if he sort of, like, you know, really takes off, as, you know, with Gerard Leto. I won't be surprised if Harley Quinn's in it as well.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where they made this film way in advance. Had they seen the success of a film like Deadpool, I think they would have maybe called an audible. But considering that, you know, they have this film and it's pretty much done, I think, and like I said, because of that, I think down the road, would I be surprised if we got a Harley Quinn movie with the success of this movie, and then just the way they saw there's kind of a market for, like, a character like Deadpool, and Harley Quinn's sort of their, you know, their DC equivalent. So I have to imagine maybe down the road we're going to get that as well. Okay, and our last news story, now you're going to have to spotlight this, because I'm not quite sure, and you were sort of explaining to me off air, but I guess you can explain more in detail and explain to the audience, was what the heck is Meg?
Okay, right. Meg was a novel many, many years ago, and it's basically a novel about a giant prehistoric shark, which is known as a megalodon. And the idea is that basically in this novel, it's kind of like a Jaws type novel by somebody called Steve Alton. And it was basically, it was kind of had like a cult success, shall we say. And it's one of these films that people basically, you know, for years and years talked about basically making into a film. Well, it's been greenlit this week, and it's going to be made with Jason Statham in the starring role. There is nothing in this that does not sound awesome to me. You know, a film about a giant prehistoric shark and Jason Statham. I mean, just shut up and take my money.
It's a formula for success.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Jason Statham's one of the, we talked about last week, some of the low budget films that I'd seen. We talked about Danny Trejo and, Michael Ironside, about the sort of, you know, stick them in a movie and they just make any movie a lot better than it should be. And Jason Statham's one of these. I've seen loads of Netflix films, like, you know, really low budget sort of gangster movies that he's in. And he just has this thing that he just sort of makes, you know, movies, you know, better by being in there. You know, it's just such a fun thing. I mean, he was actually, was it Fast and Furious 7 or 8, the last one? I've lost count. But he was in that. And if you've ever seen the opening scene to that, where he's walking through the hospital that he's just sort of, like, you know, gone on a rampage through. It's just absolutely incredible. And him being in a film about a giant shark, it's, you know, it just sort of, you know. But this week, they mentioned that the Avatar's getting 4 sequels in the future. Ooh. I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn about that. I don't give a damn about James Cameron and his movie. All I'm bothered about is Meg and when that's coming out. That's the one I'm going to be looking forward to.
Okay. Yeah, and it was in Fast and Furious 7.
Was it Fast and Furious 7?
Yes.
Right? Okay. I, like I say, I've lost count with those movies.
You see that movie he was in not too long ago? What's the Spy?
Oh, the one with Melissa McCarthy. I never saw that one.
That one was a surprise hit. Now, My friend sort of sold me on it because he's like, well, look at the score on Rotten Tomatoes, and I believe it was in the 90s. I was like, well, and I seen the trailer, and I'm like, I don't know. And then I saw the opening credits. It's directed by Paul Feig. Now, for those of you who don't know, he's a great comedy director. He's done TV series like Freaks and Geeks. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm totally on board on this now. And I saw it, and they feature him in the advertisements and the trailer, but really, and he is a character in the film, but he's really a supporting character who's, you know, he's in here and there, and I'd say maybe in the 2 hour runtime for the film, maybe he's in it for like 30 minutes, 45 minutes. So it's one of those films to where, you know, they sort of built it in a certain way, and once you get around to watching the film, it's completely different. And yeah, he's still in the movie, and he's still a featured character, but he's not like, it's not a buddy comedy film like they presented it as. So, but if you haven't already, check that film out. It was a surprise hit, and it was surprisingly funny, because you look at the trailer and it's like, okay, we get it. It's the obvious kind of wacky humor, buddy humor, and I'm like, whatever. And I sort of dismissed it, but then I heard all these raving reviews, and then I saw the director. I was like, okay, I'm on board. Let's watch this film and let's have a good time. And it's, and at the end of the day, I finished watching the film, and it's pretty good, and I recommend it. Okay, speaking of film, we're done talking news. Let's move on to our next segment, Raiders Slate. Now, we've done 1970, 1971, 1972. Now, we've moved to 1973. And we have the top 10 films of 1973 as far as box office is concerned as from teoco170.com. I'll be sure to link in the description if you want to check it out for yourself. But these are the top 10 films of 1973, starting from number 10 is Enter the Dragon. Number 9 is, let's see if I can pronounce this, Serpico. Am I pronouncing that right, Dezzle?
Serpico, I think okay. It is, yeah.
Robin Hood. Now, that's the animated film from Disney. Magnum Force. The Way We Were. Let's see if I can pronounce this. Papillon?
Papillon.
Papillon is number 6. For number 4, I have American Graffiti. Live and Let Die is number 3. Number 2 is The Sting. And at number 1, we have The Exorcist. A lot of great films. When I was doing my homework on this, I was like, man. And I did my research. Obviously, when I say research, I plug in, you know, most of these films I've seen already, but some of these films I've never heard of. I'm like, well, let's see what Rotten Tomatoes thinks. And most of them actually performed pretty well. And the one that really caught my eye, and I was talking to Dazza about this, and I was like, I was surprised because the 1973 animated film from Disney, Robin Hood. Now, I remember I seen that film as a kid growing up, and it just, you know, it's one of those things you just assume it's part of the Disney wheelhouse. And it's one of those films that's just like, you know, it's another one of their films that they've done. And I remember having good memories of it as a child. But then when I saw the reviews for it, I'm like, whoa, 40%? And I saw some of the reviews from, I guess, back in the day. And they were you know, really down the film. Now, I have to imagine that they're maybe comparing this to other Disney films that they've done in the past. But this one caught me by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to admit, I've never seen this one. It's this film. It's funny because as a film, it's one that I always wanted to see because I always was into like the sort of like the sword fighting type adventure movies and stuff like that. So it's one that I wanted to see. But when I was a kid, it was quite difficult to actually see a lot of Disney movies because they very rarely got shown on TV. Even when videos came out, they were never available on videos. It wasn't until like, you know, years and years later. I think it was in the mid-90s when we first actually started releasing them on home video for you to actually rent or buy. So it's really tough to actually get to see some. So I never basically I've seen it, you know, so I can't really comment on, you know, on what it's like. But to me, the bits that I always saw, you know, looked fine. I think Disney were going through a bit of a weird patch during this because a few weeks ago, one of the ones that came up was it the Aristocats?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seemed to me that they'd gone away from, like, you know, the classic fairy tale movies that they did, you know, the sort of ones on, like, you know, based on, like, you know, literature, like your Jungle Books and that sort of thing. And I don't know if they're sort of trying to make themselves more modern, you know, and changing the direction if they'd sort of burnt through all those stories, but they seem to be going through like, a weird sort of, I don't know, like, they seem to be very big on the sort of, like, you know, the cartoon animals, like, you know, the Tom and Jerry type thing, because they had the, I think, the Rescuers and all that sort of thing. So they seem to be going through a bit of a transition anyway. But, you know, it's I know that the cartoon movies from that era that they did were not as well received, they're not as fondly remembered as the sort of like the real classic stuff, like your Snow White and Sleeping Beauty and that sort of stuff. I seem to remember around about this time we're making like a lot of that live action movies as well. Okay. You know, we're making like Herbie and Cat from Outer Space and that sort of thing.
All right, let's. So as far as what's like I said, sort of going back to it, and it's like I saw those reviews, and I was like, well, let's go back and rewatch it. And obviously, there's some things in the film where I'm like, as an adult, you kind of cringe. It's like, well, you understand this movie's made for kids, but I watch it, and I'm like, it's just fine because I wanted to, and it sort of made me get ahead of myself. But that's what it appeared like I'm doing, but I'm not. I wanted to slate this, but I'm like, I watch it. I'm like, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. There's films I picked on before in the past for my slate segment. I'm like, this is a fine movie. I'm not gonna slate just because it's the weakest performing of the 10. So that's just a discussion point. But Daz, what would you be your rate film of the 10 bunch?
I would go with The Sting.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, basically, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. Anyway. I feel with Robert Redford and what's his name? God, I'm real bad at this. but Paul Newman, that's the name I'm trying to go for. Anything with those in, is going to be awesome filming. They worked really well as a pair. One thing I love about this film is the 70s were sort of getting more like an edgy feel to them, movie-wise. They were sort of, you were getting sort of a bit like, of sort of more like experimental counterculture type sort of, vibe about them. But the Sting, though, was sort of more of a... I always forget that it's actually made in the 70s, because it's got kind of more like a 60s type outlook to it. Not just the fact that it's sort of, set, sort of, quite a few decades before that. It just feels... the way it's put together, it's got like sort of like a nice vibe to it and everything, the music and everything like that. And it's sort of got like a classical structure to it. It does feel like a film that you would sort of, more associate with made in the 60s. But, I think it's, an absolutely fabulous film. Robert Shaw's, a great villain on it. There's a lot of humour and, a lot of really good, clever twists in it, with the scam that they're pulling. So, This is one that I can sort of like, sit down and watch at any time, and it's got wonderful music as well, But that's the one that I would basically, if I had to pick from that bunch, that's one I would go for. I mean, I've got to say that this decade, this year that we're sort of going through now, looking at the top 10 on that, that is a really strong list.
Yeah, I know. I was like, this is going to be a challenge for this week when we go 1973 films. I'm like, I have to pick one to slate. And I can't do it. It's like, it's so hard. But I'm like, well, I'll do some research and I'll maybe rewatch some of these films and maybe I'll think of something. So that's something to look forward to once we get around to doing Slate. But for me, for my pick for Ray, I got to go with The Exorcist. Now, yeah. I was sort of torn. I was like, I was thinking this or Enter the Dragon. But I was like, well, I'd never seen all of Enter the Dragon, but I've seen, all the pivotal parts, everybody, the scenes that everyone, obviously thinks of. I'm going to go with Exorcist. That's a classic film. I think one of my friends, I was talking to her and I was saying, oh, I'm sort of torn between these films. And she sort of said, well, it's sort of cliche, but it's like saying Star Wars is cliche or it's, overrated. And it's like, because it's, it's one of those things where it really established the sort of modern era horror movie. And it's like, and that's sort of like the comparison to Star Wars. It's like, you could say Star Wars is overrated, but it's one of those films that's so influential and it's so well thought of, and it's a fantastic film. So, I gotta go with that. I'm a big horror movie buff, and this is one of the classics. So, I gotta pick. I gotta go with Exorcist.
Have you ever seen the deleted scene, the spider walking down the stairs scene?
Yes, I have.
That is creepy.
I know. let me see if I can find an animated gif of that. I want to see that. I want to creep you out. spider walk gif.
Yeah, it's just. I mean, I don't. Maybe like one step too far when we were making that film. That's why I've left it out. But I don't know why I've left it out, because the scene, it's creepy as hell, but it does, it fits in, with the film. It's an amazing scene. And just, creepy as hell.
I made the mistake of putting spider walk gif into to Google, and it gave me a bunch of actual spiders, tarantulas, and I was like, ah. Were you ever there? Now I'm sorry. I'm just gonna have to talk some inside baseball with Daz for just a second. I'm sorry. Were you ever on the FRW board when people would post pictures of spiders to freak out Yemo?
No,
that was the funniest thing on the board for a good while. Like Yemo wouldn't go on certain threads on the board. He'd be like, "No, someone's gonna post a picture of a spider and scare me."
Since we're going off a tangent, I used to work with a lady in a bookshop who had this massive fear of snakes, to the extent that if somebody came to the counter buying a snake book, she would kind of start to freak. And when one time, so there was this animal book that we had, this like really big one, and on the front cover was like a snake, and it was almost, the picture was so big, it was almost like a scale, an actual scale picture of, like, massive snake. And when somebody came to the counter to buy it, she was like, running away from the counter. She could not. If I ever saw somebody buying a snake book, I always used to try and get in first before her. So that I serve that person, so that she couldn't actually sit see. It's funny how people get like really freaked out about stuff like that.
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually looking a Google image search for the spider walk, and one of them kind of exposes it. They show her; she's obviously doing the walk down the stairs at the spider walk, but they show her doing it at normal speed. I'm like, oh, so they just sped it up in the final film. So I'm like, oh, that kind of takes away the magic of the scene. Okay, that goes into our next segment, Rate and Slate. Let's go into Slate. Dazza, did you think of a film to slate? Because I know, for me anyway, I couldn't think of one. I tried my best. There's not a weak bunch in this group, at least as far as I'm concerned. So I couldn't do it.
No, I mean, the thing is, because I actually came up with this, I'm like, you're looking at this bunch, there's not a film in there that I personally don't like or enjoy on some level that I've seen. So, but because I actually came up with this concept, I feel duty bound to pick one, that I can see. And the one that I can see, and this is going to sound bad because this is the second time I picked a James Bond film, I would have to pick Live and Let Die. Mm-hmm. Basically because there's a lot that I actually sort of like about it, but it's, there is quite a few things in there that I'm not a big fan of. I think Roger Moore was his first James Bond film, and it wasn't my favourite James Bond anyway. But I think it took a while to get into this role from this film. And there's quite a bit that grates me about this film. For a start, I've seen this quite a few times, and a lot of the time I sort of start to lose the plot of to actually what is happening and what his mission is meant to be and everything. And he's got lots of like weird stuff in there, like the voodoo with the guy shooting the guy in the head and sort of his eyes looking up to the thing in his skull. And then you've got that sort of scene with the comedy police cop, the one who's sort of chasing after him and sort of like, the Texas guy and everything like that. So I would have to pick Live and Let Die.
I think when we watched this film just out of spite of you, I'm like, oh, I remember having great memories of this film. The voodoo guy was great.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's one of the bad films. It's just that of the whole bunches, because there's quite a few things that I didn't like about it, that's why I would actually sort of pick it in there. I have to say it's probably one of my favourite James Bond themes.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love it. It's a really, really great, song, just sort of, and I think it sort of, it just captures the actual, the James Bond, the darkness of it. Cause a lot of the James Bond songs, if you actually sort of like, go through them, they're very much about him sort of being like they seem to focus on the fact that he's like an absolute stud in the bedroom. that women fall in love with him and stuff like that. Whereas this one is basically pretty much about him being, really heartless and ruthless and being a violent killer, And so that's like, so the song I absolutely love, but, there's another scene as well where he makes the fat guy explode.
Yeah, I'm looking at the images from the film, and that scene's a little goofy.
Yeah, okay. Have you ever read any of the James Bond books?
No, I'm guilty of saying I've just watched all the films.
Yeah,
so.
I have to. I've read all the James Bond books, and The Live and Let Die is one of the most. Let's just say Ian Fleming's had lots of issues.
Oh,
put it this way: because it's like the film, it's set in the in the Deep South, and there's a lot of sort of obviously like black characters in there, and the dialogue, it's basically, imagine if you were sort of, imagine basically like a rich English guy who's never met a single black guy in his life.
Ah, got it.
And has got the idea of how a black guy should speak by watching Gone with the Wind or something like that. It is absolute, when you read it, it's absolutely cringeworthy.
Yeah, you know what? I put it into Google right now, and I'm actually looking. I don't know how I missed this. I just assumed it's a Jane Bond film, and I've seen it. I remember having good memories of it, but it also was a couple years ago. On IMDb, it's 6.8 out of 10, and a Rotten Tomatoes is at 66. So you may be onto something here, Dazza.
Yeah. Like I say, it's not, Roger Moore wasn't one of my favorite James Bonds anyway, but it just, a lot that I didn't like about this film. I think a lot of his later James Bond films were better. You know, the next two, Man with a Golden Gun and the Spy Who Loved Me, I liked. But, you know, this one, it was kind of, you know, but I would slate this one just on the thing that I think we're looking for a different direction from Sean Connery, and I think some of it worked and some of it didn't.
Okay. To each our own opinion. All right. From there, we're going to compare our rate picks to what won Best Picture for 1974. Now, if you're wondering why we're doing 1974, and I'm just going to explain this every week, what we had was, with these films that came out in 1973, with the thing what they do with the Oscars, it's always the year after. So we're comparing our picks to the Oscars, but the Oscars are always the year after. So we're going to go the Best Picture pick for 1974. And Dazza, you won, I guess if you want to put it anyway. The Sting won Best Film of 1974, according to the Major Motion Pictures Academy.
Oh, cool.
All right. Yeah. I think that's going to go into our home stretch, if you will. Dazza, what have you been watching as of late?
Well, I went to Pictures earlier this week, and I went to see Hardcore Henry.
I never heard of this film, and I saw some reviews, and I'm like, whatever. I sort of dismissed it, even though I had no idea what the film was about. I heard somebody do a review of this film, and it sounds like I wouldn't say it's a revolutionary film, but this sounds like it's an interesting film. I'm not using that as a means to put it down. It's a film that's different. You know, every film can't be an Oscar winner and an Oscar contender. It's always nice to have a film that's just a fun romp, and that's what this film sounds like. Now, explain to people what the premise of this film is.
Well, the premise of this film, it's if you ever played like a first person shoot 'em up game, something like Doom, it's basically like that. The entire film is basically from the perspective of one character. So you're basically seeing everything from their eyes, and it's an action film. The other thing is, as well, is that that the character that you are basically watching everything through has got amnesia. Mm-hmm. So he basically wakes up in a lab. He keeps getting these sort of little flashbacks, but he basically has no idea of what he is. So it's basically pretty much like a computer game. Because it being an action movie, so when he's in fight scenes, you're basically looking at who he's shooting and everything like that. Now, when it first started, this film, I thought within the first 10 minutes, I thought this is a cool idea, but there's no way that this is not going to get tedious, you know, after a while. Incredibly, though, it works because they basically do such a good job of the films as it goes along, of making all the action scenes, you know, really different from each other, that you never actually get bored of it at all. It's got the guy in it whose name I forgot. I think it's Shalito Copley, who basically, if you've ever seen District 9, he was the main character in that, and he was also in the A-Team movie as Howling Mad Murdoch, and he basically is a character that keeps cropping up in there. He's sort of almost like your guide to the film almost, and he's just absolutely great in it. You know, really, really good. It's just a really amazing, fun movie, and absolutely, you know, such a total wild ride. I have to say that if you suffer from motion sickness, or you have any trouble with heights, this is not a film for you. Because I have to admit, I don't really have a problem with that, but there were a few times when I was starting to feel a little bit sick at certain times. Not massively, but just felt a little bit, you know, through some of the scenes where you sort of, it's like really high tense and everything. But personally, I mean, this was one of the sort of, like, you know, the best action films I think I've seen, you know, that wasn't a a Marvel type movie, you know, for a long time. There was some twists in it that I kind of saw coming a mile off, but in a way that sort of worked because it is, this is a very much based on computer game type, you know, adventures. And it was sort of like, it fitted in with that little thing. Just to sort of describe how the movie, you know, feels throughout it. Have you ever seen a video by a band called The Prodigy called Smack My Bitch Up?
Yeah, it's reminiscent of that.
It's basically like that for 90 minutes. In fact, there's a scene where you actually go into a strip club and you basically, they've pretty much created, you know, the scene from that video. You know, so it's one that if you can basically stomach the whole sort of like, or the sort of like the flashing images and the sort of the screen, you know, going from one thing to another. If you can cope with all that, I really do recommend it because it is a really, really fun movie. If you've ever seen a film called Shoot 'Em Up, if you sort of like the sort of humour and the sort of action scenes which are in that, which I did, I thought Shoot 'Em Up was a great film. I think you will enjoy this.
Okay, cool enough.
And another film that I saw is a Chinese film called Ip Man 3, which was a martial arts movie.
Okay.
And really, really enjoyed it. It was pretty much action packed, but it was quite a different sort of martial arts movie from what I've seen before, in the fact that it had sort of like this kind of like philosophy behind it. Basically, it had like a really mild mannered lead in it, action hero who was based. It was very much about sort of his style of fighting was basically pretty much like on skill and discipline. So it wasn't like an action film like a where you know the character trading blows. He was almost like a sort of like a Gracie type fighter.
Okay, what's the name of this film again? I'm having problems looking for it.
Ip Man 3.
Ip Man 3.
Ip. IP.
Oh, okay.
Ip Man 3. Okay. But one of the things that was sort of interesting about it was Mike Tyson was in the film. Now the thing, what I found interesting about this is that I watch a lot of foreign films, you know, with subtitles and stuff. You know, a lot of Japanese films, Chinese films, that sort of thing. You know, a real, you know, those foreign films. And I often find it hard to figure out if somebody's like giving a good performance or not because they're not speaking English. You know, it's sort of, you know, apart from the mannerisms and stuff, I find it really hard to tell if they're delivering dialogue in a good way. Mike Tyson was kind of, I think he probably felt the same way about this film because obviously this film was made for, you know, the Chinese audience and obviously overseas as well, but it's primarily a Chinese film. So the lines that he was delivering them in such a sort of weird wooden style, you know, not acting at all, just to delivering the scenes. It was just like, you know, just I just found it really funny, you know, it just sort of thing. But the thing about Mike Tyson is he still had like, you know, loads and loads of presence, you know, screen presence and stuff, and he's such a like a menacing figure and everything. So the fight scenes that he was in were really, really good, but it was just like funny that his acting in it was absolutely dreadful.
But well, the film, as we expected.
Yeah, but the film itself, you know, was like, you know, if you can cope with, you know, cause I know some people don't like subtitles or foreign films, that sort of thing. It was a very different martial arts films to a lot of martial arts films that I've actually seen. It was, you know, sort of, you know, a more sort of like, you know, sedate feel, action packed, but more like, you know, more gentle sort of like, you know, feel to it in the actual, you know, the character and everything like that. But like, you know, and like it's, the narrative was, you know, slightly strange for what probably a Western audience would have, because you had two storylines going on at the same time, and then one storyline just seemed to stop. You had the storyline where you had Mike Tyson being a gang boss and sort of like, you know, bullying this like, you know, small village. I mean, you had another scene where there was like a pretender to the guys, the main characters, thrown as the top martial artist in the world, sort of thing. So you have the two storylines going on that didn't fit in massively, but it was just like a different narrative to what you normally used to. But yeah, but that's what I've seen this week. I also saw I saw a trailer for a film called Friend Request, which was basically a Facebook horror movie about a
oh god
about a Facebook a woman on with a Facebook profile who's basically like possessed and like possesses you through the through Facebook, and it looked just absolutely awful. I was watching this film. It's obviously that because Facebook featured so prominently in it with the logo, you know, so much of it and everything, and it just seemed like a really bad film. This is the second like Facebook horror film we've done. We did one a few years ago called Unfriended.
Yeah, there's a lot of these films. I think there's one maybe not too long ago. Yeah, they'll pop up every now and then. You have to know people like the Facebook or all of the social media sites. They get behind this, and I'm sure they pick up a lot of the bill.
Yeah. But this friend request one, it just looked absolutely dreadful.
All right, let's do our final segment. Dazza, what have you been reading as of late? Now you told me off air that you've been reading some stuff as of late, so I'm curious to see what it is.
I've gone away from the bargain bin and actually bought some new comics this week. I got Poe Dameron, the Star Wars one.
Ooh, what'd you think of that?
I really liked it. I thought the little BB-8 solo story at the end was really, really cute.
Yeah, the little backup in that with the mechanic and the X-Wing pilot. You know, he had a crush on her, but he didn't know how to approach her. And BB-8 had talked to her as well, and she really liked him. But they were both too shy to talk to each other. So what BB-8 was doing is he was slowly but surely taking apart the X-Wing, and it kept falling apart, and he didn't know why. So it was a natural excuse for, and obviously BB-8 introduces the two of them because she's a mechanic and the plane keeps falling apart and you can't figure out why, not knowing it's BB-8 who's doing it.
Yeah, it was playing Cupid basically. Yeah,
yeah, and in the art's very cute. I see if I can very quickly find the artist that did that. It's most of the comic book is done, you know, your normal sort of pseudo realistic style with the Poe Dameron story, but when they had the backup, it's done very much in that kind of cutesy cartoon style, and it was a cute backup. And of all the Star Wars comic books they've done, this is the one where, you know, on my other show, Comic Conversations, I'll read it and be like, guys, I don't know why we read this. It's like they read awfully quick. They're action heavy, and there's nothing really there substantively. This is the only book that I read, and I'm like, this is actually a pretty good comic, all things considered. It's actually a legitimate comic. It's not like, you know, the other comic book Star Wars titles you sort of pick up, and it's like, well, they're like ads for the movies. And I'm like, whatever. And this is the one that I actually read, and I'm like, this is really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. I really like the character because he's kind of like a mix of Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, in the fact that he's like an actual pilot fighting for the good cause and everything, but he's kind of got a little bit of this sort of the Han Solo sort of swagger about him, and so there's also quite a bit of humor when he was talking to people. The only thing that I have about it that was like really grating, and I find this about the Star Wars movies in general, is Every when he's talking to like BB-8 and everything and other characters, he keeps saying buddy constantly. You know, like sort of, okay, buddy, we're going in. Hold on tight, buddy, and all this. And he just kind of, it's something that always grated me about the Star Wars films as well, when Han and Luke would call each other on the radios and say, how you doing, old buddy, and stuff like that. And it was like, just kind of, you know, just, it was just something that just sort of always annoyed me personally.
No, but it's, I mean, yeah, I can see why you would have a problem with that. It's kind of a weird way of talking. But I thought, you know, it was a great film, not film, it was a great book. Reminded me, like, sort of just, you know, the pantheon of, like, I'd say maybe airplane films. Like, the only one I can think of really off the top of my head is Top Gun. Sort of, you know, it's not the sole focus of the book, but to me that was the appeal of the book. It's like they did all the stuff with the squadron. And there were several instances where they showed dogfights. So I'm like, okay, this book's for me then.
Yeah.
Okay, what else have you been reading?
I've also read the Harley Quinn book this week, which is basically I forgot what they call it, but it's basically the team Harley Quinn, where she's basically put together like a team. Who also to dress like her and everything. And like I said last week, I've really started to become a Harley Quinn fan. You know, I've ordered from Works the graphic novels which take place after 52, the new 52 series, because I've heard that's sort of really good. So I'm really getting into that. And the Harley Quinn book was just a lot of fun. You know, really enjoyed reading it. The one though that I've read this week that I really, really enjoyed was Gwenpool.
See, that's what I told the guys. And now this show comes out before the Comic Conversation show. And the guys, I think Dave didn't want to read it. And I think Alex didn't make time for it. And, you know, obviously, I saw the title of the book. But I've been reading the Howard the Duck book. And she's been good in that. But that's also the strength of that. It's done by Chip Zdarsky. And he's a great writer. If you haven't already, Dad, check out the I think it's a different writer. I think it's Nick Spencer. Check out The Fix. That's a really good book. I sort of got a little lost there for a second. But, you know, that's a book, you know, I saw and I'm like, well, I'm not a big fan of Deadpool. I don't read the regular title. He's kind of funny in Uncanny Avengers, but he's just another character. And, you know, you see it and I'm like, Gwenpool, it's going to be by different writers, not by Zdarsky. So I'm like, well, I'll give it a try. Issue one. If I don't like it, I'll drop and never read it again. I read it and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, I absolutely enjoyed it. And I think I've said before that I'm finding that I get more pleasure now from the more lighthearted comedy books, you know, that Marvel does.
Okay, I'm glad you're with me too, because for a second there I thought, you know, I had a problem. You know, we review all these books and more often than not I tend to like the lighter, more comedy heavy issues. I'm like, me, is that just me or just, I don't know what that says about me, but the fact that you're the same. So I'm glad I found someone that I'm glad I found a comrade that prefers, you know, sort of lighthearted kind of comedy oriented stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a really, really big fan. I love the humor and everything. But one of the things that I mean, the bit where she like, draws the dollar bills on her eyes and stuff like that.
That was cute.
Just little things. This is like, you know, just a character that I just think, you know, I'm really going to enjoy. The thing about it is, though, that it was a really funny book and, like, really lighthearted and entertaining. And then in the last couple of pages, the tone of it just, like, sort of, it went, I don't want to sort of spoil it for people who haven't read it yet and sort of want to, but it takes a direction in the last couple of pages, which I just wasn't expecting, and just sort of, I wouldn't say change the entire tone of the book, but it just did something like really, really surprising that I wasn't expecting. And it just left me thinking, wow, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Most of the book centers around her, you know, just bebopping around. She's from another universe, so she doesn't quite know how things work. But she does the Deadpool shtick where she talks to the reader. She regularly breaks the fourth wall. And she's like, whatever, I'm the superhero. It doesn't matter what kind of danger I'm in. It doesn't matter that I don't have superpowers. Things always work out for the superhero, so I shouldn't be worried. And at the last couple of pages of this book, now, like I said, maybe I'll respect your wishes not to spoil it, but it takes a really radical turn, and she gets really depressed, and it gets not super dark, but it's something to where you can kind of tell this isn't going to be the book going forward, but it's going to be, at least for now, it's going to be this story that she's telling to her. She was so happy and so, you know, just bebopping around, just having a good time. And now she's sort of waking up to the real world, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, there's an element in it that's introduced that you think, oh, this is going to be going forward. This element's going to feature quite a lot. And then it's basically taken away. So I don't want to say much more than that. But I mean, read this anyway, because I kind of read this because of something that you mentioned last week. You just, when we were talking about Harley Quinn, and you just sort of mentioned this book that you'd heard good things about it. So I kind of sort of, you know, thought I'd take a punt on it, and I'm really glad I did, because I've sort of, you know, I enjoy this book more than I've enjoyed, you know, comics for, you know, a long time.
Okay, now let me ask you, as someone who reads now Gwenpool and who regularly reads Harley Quinn, are the books comparable, or are they completely two different characters?
I'd say they are different, and I can't really sort of put my finger on it. Why? I think the thing with Harley Quinn, Gwenpool comes across to me as just someone who is sort of funny and quirky. And she's basically sort of, cause she basically, as I understand it, she basically comes from our world. So she comes from our universe, oh, and she's gone into the Marvel universe. That's what I've picked up when I'm reading Gwenpool. And that, you know, so she's, you know, and I think she even sort of, I think that's why she sort of knows that she's sort of like in the comic universe, because she's actually read Marvel comics in our universe itself. So that's why she knows about this, you know, what's going on and talks about things as if it was like a comic book. Harley Quinn's sort of different in the fact that she's basically crazy. You know, so oh, okay, but yeah. she's also like she's no longer like a villainous, so she's trying to put all that behind her. So I would say there's, you know, there's quite, they're very similar in sort of hue. If you like Harley Quinn, you will like Gwenpool as well. But it's not as if like Gwenpool is like, you know, a complete clone of her. You know, it is sort of like, you know, a totally different, you know, character.
And the one thing I have to put over now, obviously they start, it's a weird book in the sense that it starts with a backup and then it goes into the main story.
Yeah.
The art in the opener, something to choose to call it, or the backup in the beginning, it was fine. It was, you know, it was different, but it sort of like, it didn't, it kind of, it made me thought, oh, well, this is just going to be a female Deadpool book. And I'm going to continue to read it because it came out this week and I want to read it so I can dismiss it later. And then we get the meat in store and we get a completely different artist. That sort of, it's, I wouldn't say it's full on anime, but it's like an anime inspired, art to it. Everything looks kind of, chibi is not the right term, but it looks like an Asian inspired Disney cartoon. That's the way I want to describe it, to where they have Gwenpool and she has the, you know, the tight fitting costume, but it's not really ever played for cheesecake. It's sort of just, you know, she's just a teenage girl and she decides to be a superhero and she's drawn as like a sweet, naive little, I wouldn't say little girl, but you know, teenager. So it works on that level. And I think that's the thing I like about her naivety. Let's see if I'm pronouncing that right, but you get the point I'm trying to make. I like that they have that as part of the character. It's not like Deadpool where it's completely over the top and he's a complete cartoon character. She's a silly character, but at the end of the day, she's still sort of a three-dimensional human being. So I think that's the heart of this book, and I think that's really the appeal going forward with this book. So I really like it, and I recommend it with a huge thumbs up.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely one that I'm basically going to become a regular reader of this one.
Okay. I think that's going to do it for this week's show. Now, like I said, if you haven't already, check out Daz's article about superhero team fights. He sort of brought it up earlier than usual in the show, but I like that. He's sort of incorporated in the show. If you haven't already, check that out. Daz, are there any other articles that you've been working as of late that you want people to check out?
I've not really posted anything since last week's Grand National Wayne. Just to give you a quick preview of what I'm going to be working on, because Civil War comes out in a couple of weeks, and because I've been sort of talking for the past 6 months about doing a Civil War article, I am basically going to get that done and sort of, you know, like a Civil War retrospective on the comic series as I sort of, you know, remember it. So at some point I'm going to get that out there. And just another thing to look out for, because something that I'll be working on is Invicta Fighting Championships will be having a show early next month, and it's kind of a traditional half guard that I always do like a preview to the show, which is pretty much always going to be like a big hype piece of me basically just saying how awesome the show is going to be and how awesome all the great fighters are and everything. So that's something that I'll be posting, you know, between now and normally comes out the week before the actual event itself, mm-hmm. which is early May. So that will be something else that I'll be doing on there. It's kind of the Invicta thing is kind of like my baby on the side.
Hey, Dazza, since you're going to be writing this article and you sort of done maybe some research about the show, have you investigated where the show is going to be held at?
I have heard where the show is going to be held.
Where is it going to be held at, Dazza?
It's going to be held in California.
And now I've already talked to my buddy, and this is my buddy who I'm thinking about bringing in the fold on halfguard.com. He said, you know, this event's pretty close to where you live. You want to go? It's like, sure, why not? And I've seen the prices for maybe first and second row. I'm like, I think I may go all on overboard with this thing. And it's, I'm going to be attending the show.
Awesome. So, I went to Invicta show last year and I got on the, I think it was the third row I got on. And it's, they really are fun shows to go to. If you go to that show.
Yeah, I think the second to last cyborg fight, they had one over here in Los Angeles across from the Staples Center where they had the Ronda Rousey Kat Zingano fight. and it was the night before, and I went to that one, but I sort of, I didn't know what to expect, so I sort of skimped on the price of the tickets, and because it was, you know, we're talking about Los Angeles, so the tickets were maybe a little bit more, so I just got the normal standing, you know, seating area. It was really fun, really good. So I'm actually glad that they're holding it in a different part of California where the tickets are a little bit cheaper. And I saw the price of it. It's like, you know what? I'll get second and third row maybe. So I think when we do from the Tales from the Couch Zone, I think I'll do maybe a live recap of what it was like being there for the show.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, sort of.
That's gonna be a good show. There's two title matches on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got Tony Evinger in the main event. You've got another title match on there. Angela Hill's going to be fighting for the title. You've got Megan Fox down the card and everything. There's some really good fights on that show.
Okay, so that's one thing I'm looking forward to. It's the beginning of next month, so that I'm looking forward to. Keep your eyes out. I'm going to be bringing my friend within the fold. He does a MMA show as well, so that'll probably be part of the Half-Guarded family going forward. So I think that's going to do it for this week's show, Daz, unless there's anything else you want to plug or talk about very quickly.
No, I think I'm done.
Okay, so from all of us at halfguarded.com, thanks for checking out this week's show, and as always, see you next week. Bye.
Bye, buddy.
Buddy, he says.